Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with three lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Hello.
Hub Arkish.
His expertise in football is second to none.
670 The Score senior football expert.
You're talking to one of the great techno boobs of all time.
Executive editor of Pro Football Weekly.
Hey, Hub, I got a pretty simple question for you. Is Leonard Fournette still an elite NFL running back?
You know, Rob, he never was.
Shaw media analyst and sideline reporter for Westwood One.
We've got Joe calling in from Elgin.
I just want to say that you are so underrated. You're fantastic. You really are. You've got a great opinion. I would listen to you all day.
Breaking down the latest on the Bears and news from around the NFL.
When will the Bears give Allen Robinson his contract extension?
It's a puzzle to me. I don't understand why it hasn't happened yet.
Hub Arkish.
I'd love to poke you. I'm not going to now.
With Dan Bernstein and Layla Rahimi on 670 The Score. The Score.
Let's talk some football with Hub Arkish. He is on Twitter at Hub_Arkish. He is on the Alpamonte Nissan hotline, Alpamonte Nissan on North Avenue in Melrose Park, or at apnissan.com. He's also jumping on our Twitch stream. You can see him there right now. Hello. That is twitch.tv/Chicago670TheScore. How are you today, Hub?
I am good. How are you guys doing this morning?
Good. As the Bears are in search of a defensive coordinator, and we're seeing staffs get locked down across the league right now, these things are getting filled and the music's going to stop and the Bears are going to need a guy. Do you think they have one that we just don't know about yet?
I think they have a preference that we don't know about yet. I think they're comfortable with a couple of their in-house candidates, and I think they're trying to check and make sure that they've done a reasonable search. But yeah, I think that that they are close and comfortable with a couple of their options.
Hub, I'm sorry. I don't know why I had a mild freak out watching you walk out of the frame on Twitch like you weren't still listening. But I'm glad you're back and seated now. Just one of those dramatic irony pieces that you only get from watching the Zoom or the Twitch. When it comes to the Bears, there was an interesting discussion brought up by Chris Sims, Mike Florio's partner on Pro Football Talk, and he talked about the idea of Olin freaked out. Because Olin's like, yeah, this sounds real cool, but it's just not going to happen. Changing the offensive line, cut both tackles, and then find somebody better. I don't see that happening. I don't think you do either. But do you think there could be potentially some big change on the offensive line? Even if it's one person, it's still pretty significant.
I'm sorry, did you say that they suggested cut both tackles or kept both tackles?
Oh, no, they said cut.
Yeah, I would cut them both. I think that they've got they've got big salary cap issues, and there is approximately an $11 or $12 million cap savings between the two. I got to go back and check my numbers. That's not to say that you couldn't re-sign one or both. I just don't think that they're that hard to replace. I think that Bobby Massey is probably a little better than average and maybe underrated at right tackle. Charles Leno's been a problem for a few years now, and I would be pretty disappointed if they went back to opening day on 2021 with those two, or at least with Leno as their starting left tackle. I don't know how many more disasters we have to see before somebody says enough is enough. Now, I think the interior of the offensive line is in pretty good shape. I am not convinced that Alex Bars can't play one of those tackle positions. So I don't think that they're all that desperate. I do agree with Olin on that. I just think when you combine the necessary cap savings and I think the significant need to improve at left tackle, that I don't have that big an issue with that suggestion.
What's the effect of Philip Rivers' retirement this morning on the overall NFL quarterback market and how that trickles back to the Bears?
I think it's a little surprising, Dan, but I think it only affects the Indianapolis Colts. I don't think anybody saw him going through a free agent, recruitment dating period. I think it was a question, would he give the Colts another year or not? It certainly leaves the Colts in a tough spot. But beyond that, I don't think it has a huge impact. Now, you know, it will have the Colts out there competing probably for another veteran backup, if you will. But they still have to find their young quarterback of the future. Would they get involved if there is a Deshaun Watson market? Would they get involved? I don't know. You know, they've got a lot of young talent on that football team, and if they could lock in a 25-year-old franchise quarterback, they'd be in pretty good shape. But I don't believe there's going to be a Deshaun Watson market. I think that little bit of smoke is going to go away rather than light a big fire. And so I don't think it has a huge impact. They could very well be looking at a Tyrod Taylor, a Ryan Fitzpatrick, a Andy Dalton, you know, as much for number two as number one. Those are guys I expect the Bears would be looking at as well if they don't bring back Mitch. They could take a hard look at Mitch. When you look at what that offense is set up to do, he's another 25-year-old quarterback who might be pretty interesting to them.
Mike Florio for the Bears brought up the idea of Jimmy Garoppolo. What do you think about it?
You know, guys, listen, Mike works hard and does his job, but he likes to bring up a lot of things that he just kind of makes up, you know, and I mean,
I thought about Garoppolo too. I'm not going to lie.
For what? I mean, there's a lot of guys I think about, you know, we don't know that San Francisco is interested in dealing him and replacing him. He's got the big contract already. I don't think Jimmy Garoppolo has proven all that much. If I'm going to make a bold move for my franchise quarterback, I don't know that Jimmy Garoppolo checks all those boxes. So, it's one more conversation. I get the Eastern Illinois and Rolling Meadows connection. Would love to have him throwing to Cole Kmet. Oh, wouldn't that be fun? But I like Garoppolo. It depends on what the price tag would be. I'm not saying that I would rule it out. I mean, while he does have the veteran contract, it's not as onerous as Watson's or a few others. If in fact they're shopping the entire NFL and if Garoppolo is available and if the price tag is not aligned, let's not forget that there's been nothing but second round picks involved with Jimmy Garoppolo until now. And if he's being dealt again, it's something less than that, you know? So, I mean, if you could get Garoppolo for a third, yeah, I'd be really interested in that, I should say. If I had to give up a second, I'd have to think twice about it and look at the rest of my roster.
We're going to see a Packers team right now that, at least according to the scout that Brad Biggs talked to, said is essentially ahead of the Bears at nearly every positional group. And after we heard the Bears' cockamamie press conference and all of their twisted logic and everything they said was not okay despite it being okay, what does it mean? And what does it mean to you when we turn on our TV on Sunday and we watch this Packers team operate, just the distance that the Bears still have to close between themselves and their rival?
Well, I think you got to pick your starting point. I would debate vigorously whether the Packers don't trail the Bears a bit in positional groups on defense. Offense, they certainly have a clear advantage. And then there's Aaron Rodgers. You know, this is the problem with the Bears-Packers comparisons, guys. I mean, Rodgers makes it a wasted exercise because as long as he's there and playing the way he is, the Bears aren't going to catch the Packers, just like most of the rest of the NFC is. They're now 26-6 over the last two seasons, you know, not just the Bears. So to me, it's not so much, you know, stacking the Bears roster against the Packers as saying what is wrong with the Bears, you know, what caused the 6-game losing streak, what areas do they need to get better at, and can they then compete? Because no matter what they do at quarterback, they're not going to be able to compete with Aaron Rodgers.
You think the Packers win on Sunday? I know I'm jumping again a little bit.
Yeah, you know, Layla, that's probably going to be my pick. I'm struggling with it a little bit. They played 11, 12 weeks ago, and the Bucs destroyed them. You know, it was the Packers' one awful game of the season. It was in Tampa, but the Packers actually, for the most part, play a little better football on the road than they did at home this year. The key to that game was they sacked Aaron Rodgers five times and they intercepted him twice. I mean, this guy threw five picks all year and he threw two picks in that game. And the Bucs defense is playing really well right now. And there's no David Bakhtiari. Now, I don't remember. He went out the week after that game. That was week six. He was out week 7 through 9. So, you know, whether he got hurt in that game, I've got to go back and do some homework on that. But that is kind of my focal point in breaking this thing down. You can't make too much of it because everybody, you know, has a bad day. And you saw what the Saints did to the Bucs a few weeks ago, and then look at what happened Sunday. So you don't want to make too much of it. When you start doing matchups, here's where it gets a lot more interesting, because now it's not Aaron versus Mitch, it's Aaron versus Brady, you know, and that's a whole different ballgame. Now, Tom Brady is not playing at the level he did a couple of weeks ago, but he got better and better as the season went on. And take a look at the final numbers, guys. 40 touchdowns, 12 picks, and 4,600 yards. I mean, you know, we're talking about Brady in decline, and there's very few quarterbacks in history that have had seasons like that. So I think it's a classic matchup. I can't pick against the Packers at home, regardless of what the home field advantage is this year with Aaron Rodgers. But I think it's going to be a good football game, and I wouldn't be surprised if the Bucs pulled the upset, but I'm not going to pick it. I think the Packers have played the best football in the NFC all year long. Where it gets interesting, guys, is the Bills have played the best football in the AFC all year long, but can you pick them over the Chiefs?
I can't, even though I do think that they are absolutely legit, and they have firmed up that defense in a way that nothing seems to come easy. And I hate to say that I hope Patrick Mahomes plays, because then I'm falling into the same meatball trap. I hope that he is cleared and able to play because he's earned it medically, and I hope the doctors absolutely do the right things. But you know, as a fan, you want to see both of these teams at their best.
Yeah, I mean, Dan, I'm trusting that medical professionals will do the right thing in the NFL.
See, I'm not.
Well, yeah, I get it. And the NFL has gotten pretty serious about this. But I don't think it has anything to do with being a fan. I think everybody wants to see Patrick Mahomes play. I mean, what a shame it would be if the Chiefs lose without Mahomes. I mean, that's not a real test. I understand injuries are part of the game. I'm not going to hold any pity parties for him, but you know, we wait all year to see these two games. You want the four best teams. It appears you have the four best teams. I think Buffalo is not only number two, they're really close to number one, but we don't learn anything if they play the Chiefs without Mahomes and beat them. So, you know, certainly want to see them on the field.
With the coaching carousel still rolling, there are reports saying that Jay Rodgers perhaps could go to the Rams as their defensive coordinator to replace Brandon Staley. What have you heard about him? And I think that that's also a pretty high compliment, whether he goes to the Bears or stays or could perhaps go to L.A. and get that promotion there.
Well, we know that, you know, that Sean McVay likes Vic Fangio disciples. He had Brandon Staley, and so that would make perfect sense. I believe Jay Rodgers is ready. It was the first name I threw out when Chuck Pagano retired. And I expect that if he isn't offered the Bears job and if he is offered the Rams job, that he would take it. It would be a huge loss for the Bears. The question is, if he's offered both the Bears and the Rams, you know, which one would he take? And my suspicion is that he would stay here in Chicago and take the Bears job. If no other reason than familiarity and knowing exactly what he's got, hitting the ground running and having the most immediate success, even though he wouldn't be getting to coach Aaron Donald and Jalen Ramsey, which would be a dream for any defensive coach. So I think it's something the Bears have to be very aware of. I'm hoping and assuming that they're keeping a very close eye on that situation. I think that if you hear that Rodgers takes that Rams job before the Bears have announced the defensive coordinator, then you'll know the Bears did not do a good enough job of keeping Rodgers as a candidate.
Feel free to grab your Keurig anytime, because I think it's ready. So your coffee's up. the Fritz Pollard Alliance is headed now by former Bears personnel man Rod Graves. And I thought he was very diplomatic in expressing his disappointment with the ongoing fight of the Fritz Pollard Alliance, and that is to have people of color properly represented in the coaching and front office ranks. And I still remain, you know, just sort of I guess bemused is the wrong word, but so many people talk about how they like the Rooney Rule and understand and appreciate the Rooney Rule, and they talk about it, and then they hire a bunch of white people again. And we're back to the same issues where they're going to try to do some things with draft picks and try to, you know, introduce earlier opportunities and internships and externships and get people more involved. But I don't know that there's any one way to make this better in the way that Rod Graves wants and we all want.
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty frustrating right now, Dan. It's a difficult situation. I do believe the league wants to do better, but they're clearly not doing better, and they don't have the answers right now. I think it's a farce. I think it's great that Terry Fontenot and Brad Holmes got GM jobs, but now the Saints and the Rams are each going to get 2 third-round picks. That is the rich getting richer. It makes no sense to me whatsoever, and I don't know, you know, that the Rams and the Saints did all that much to improve the situation. The Falcons and the Lions did, and they're not getting rewarded for it. Then you look at the coaching situation, and you've got, you know, these jobs filled and not a single minority hire, and it's not as if there aren't quality candidates. Now, you know, the one thing, it's kind of like the thing nobody wants to talk about because you'll get in trouble, but I'm sorry, it's just the reality. There are not as many qualified minority candidates for head coaching jobs as there are Caucasians. And that's the problem that I think the league is trying to deal with by creating a Rooney Rule and trying to come up with a way to have more quality candidates in the pipeline.
But isn't that a perception problem? Isn't that exactly the kind of inherent bias that we're talking about? Is the presumption of qualification is just at a different bar?
Well, you know, Dan, without being intimate in these hiring processes and seeing resumes, I'm just going by results on the field. And I look at 32 teams and I look at the results on the field and the best units when you talk about coordinators who are usually your head coaching candidates. I look at college head coaching candidates and then you start to look at some of the top position guys and the reality is the more successful ones are more white than people of color. I think it's the gap is not as great as it was 5 or 10 years ago, but the gap is still there. Now, what is encouraging is I am seeing, top minority positional coaches getting coordinator jobs. And so hopefully now in the next couple of years, those guys will succeed, you know, and there will be improvement. But it's at the end of the day, Dan, there's no question in my mind that with these 5 head coaching jobs that were filled, each of these teams could have found an outstanding minority candidate. They just chose the white candidate over them, but it's not as if the white candidate wasn't qualified. And now you get into the negative bias situation where are you not going to hire a qualified white candidate because he's not a minority? So, I mean, I'm not pretending that I'm giving any great, you know, new wisdom here, but this is the battle of this particular problem. Our country is still fighting it, and the NFL is still fighting it, too.
Texans interviewed Eric Bieniemy, who I think is a very qualified candidate, and reports say that he interviewed well. Do you know any more as far as his possibilities of being the head coach for Houston?
Well, Layla, I'm sure he interviewed well because he's a highly qualified candidate. And I think the fact that he initially said he might turn down the interview, but then the league changed the rules and allowed both him and Todd Bowles to interview this past Monday, you know, in a window when they weren't supposed to, tells you that they're trying to encourage these candidacies. And so my guess is that Bieniemy is more interested in the job than he's let on. He had indicated last week he didn't even know if he'd be interested in going there. I don't know why you wouldn't be interested in that job. Nick Caserio is highly qualified as a GM. I mean, whatever went on there before he got there, I don't know all the details of why people are calling it the worst mess in the league. Apparently, you know, Bob McNair's son Cal is a boob, but other than that, I don't know what to make of it. But I do know Caserio is highly qualified. He's going to add good talent there. He's going to hire good coaches. That's certainly something they did in New England. And if Bienemy went there to be a team with him, you've got your franchise quarterback in place. You've got your franchise left tackle in place. You're an offensive coach. That's a pretty good place to start. And so I would say if the Texans are willing to wait until after the Super Bowl, if in fact the Chiefs get there, then I think Bienemy will be the next coach. The question is, if the Chiefs, win Sunday, will the Texans wait? Because part of the problem that you have here, guys, Dan opened our segment with it, is that other staffs are filling, and so now if you don't have a head coach until February 6th and every other staff is almost complete, putting together a quality staff is going to be tough. And so there are reasons that these teams don't wait. It's not just that they're impatient.
We are going to let you have at Hub next. 312-644-6767. He will take your calls. Bears, NFL, championship weekend, whatever you like. He is here for you, so don't go anywhere. We're Bernstein and Rahimi, and you have the score. It is that time where we turn Hub loose for you, or we turn you loose for Hub, whatever it is. You're all loose and you're all talking football, and that's what we're doing on Bernstein and Rahimi. 312-644-6767 is the number. You have a football thought, you have a football question. Now is the time for it. We will start with Blake in Oak Park on the score. Hello, Blake.
Hello, Hub. I had a question for you. I hear Matt Nagy come on these airwaves and say he's not an idiot. He self-scouts. He sees, if there's an issue with the scheme, they would change the scheme. Yet, say Rosenfels comes on and absolutely destroys his scheme. He points out every point where the scheme left Mitch in trouble on an island, and yet nothing ever changes. So is Matt Nagy an idiot? And what is the self-scouting process that the Bears actually go through?
Blake, no, he's not an idiot. The self-scouting process is they study tape constantly. They evaluate each player individually and then each position group as a unit. They chart what is working and what is not on each down and in every situation. And then, hopefully they make adjustments just like every team in the NFL. I don't come on here to critique or judge other guests and experts, but I'm not sure what makes Sage Rosenfels more qualified than Matt Nagy, and that's why I think as analysts we sometimes have to be a little more careful in how we break this stuff down.
Interesting. Because there is there's no question that Sage Rosenfels did exactly that in no uncertain terms, just completely dissect the whatever the scheme was supposed to be. He's right about that. NIU Dave, you are on the score.
Hey, Hub, I got a question and then a follow-up, if I could, real quick. Has the NFL released any statement on the non-call, the helmet-to-helmet non-call at the end of the first half of the Cleveland-Kansas City game?
They haven't released a statement to my knowledge, Dave. I know there are reports that I believe it was Sorensen will be fined but not suspended. He can't be suspended because there was no flag on the field during the game, but I did see a report that there would be a fine.
Okay, that gets to my next point. I think plays like that should be reviewable. Or I don't know, was it Belichick that said he thinks that everything should be reviewable and maybe they just curtail some of the booth reviews or something so the games aren't 4 hours long? But how? But this seems like in the playoffs we have games that are changed pretty dramatically by calls or non-calls that just really seem to happen at the wrong moment. And I think the NFL should really consider changing or re-looking at the replay system, particularly for the playoffs. What do you think about that?
Well, Dave, Bill Belichick's plan, yes, it was Bill Belichick who said coaches should be able to review whatever they want. But what's great about his plan is that he suggested that they do it within the context of the current rules so that each coach would still only get the same number of challenges. It's just that they could challenge whatever they want. So it wouldn't really increase the length of the game at all. You know, as far as that particular play, I don't think it impacted the play. I mean, he didn't lose that football because of the helmet-to-helmet hit. That ball was coming out of his hands before he got hit. So I get it. You know, yeah, you can say that there should have been a flag, and I'm not arguing that point, but I don't know that replaying it and throwing the flag is fair either, because these guys are supposed to be, you know, reffing the game in real time, which they are, obviously, and I didn't see where that had any impact on it. He fumbled that ball because he lost control of it, not because he took a helmet-to-helmet hit.
Real quick, I don't want to step on anybody's toes here, but there was a lot of people trying to figure out a way around that rule about the touchback rule. We saw it with Benny Cunningham, yeah. Famously John Fox. He reviewed it, and then they ended up losing the ball. Is there some way to do that call or that situation better or more fairly?
Yeah, I think the rule stinks, and I've never understood it. The way to do it more fairly is to, you know, just let the team that fumbled the ball retain the ball at the point of the fumble, because I don't understand why the defense should be rewarded by getting the football just because it happens to go in the end zone. You know, now, if you think that there should be some penalty for the fumble, fine, let them retain the ball and give them a 10-yard penalty or whatever it may be for fumbling into the end zone. But I think the change of possession without a recovery by the other team is completely unfair. And I don't know that anybody would love my suggestion, but at least with my suggestion, the other team, you know, maybe you could penalize them, but let them keep the football, which they deserve since the other team didn't recover it.
Frank in Oak Park makes his weekly appearance with Hub on the Score.
Great show, guys. Hub, I think I'm going to pick up something you were talking about earlier, but my question kind of broadens the scope. Olin Krutz described Nagy's ideal offense as hero ball, where offensive linemen don't get much help with double-team blocks because there are no fullbacks and seldom are two tight ends employed except in short yardage. More challenging is a heavy reliance on shotgun formation for both run and pass plays, eliminating some opportunities for play action by the quarterback. It took most of the season, but Nagy found out his line can't block for hero ball. Playing what if, let's say the Bears let tackles Leno and Massey exit to save under the cap. The Bears replace Leno with one of the top four OTs in the draft with their 20th pick. The right tackle slot is determined by a competition between Ifedi and Bars, with the loser becoming a backup on the inside. With Mustafa, Whitehair, and Daniels manning the center and guard positions, is this a line you project permitting Nagy to play mostly hero ball? If not, doesn't the other guy in the QB room with Foles have to be a very mobile option who can easily boot and run an outside zone offense?
Well, Frank, a bunch of stuff in there. First of all, and I never, challenge Olin. He watches more film than anybody I know, and he knows how to watch it, and he's right, 100% of the time. But I think, what we have to, that's in Matt's ideal scheme. This year, they played a ton of two and even three tight end from the opening game of the season. It didn't work out because it was limiting the passing game, and the other five offensive linemen still just weren't good enough. I think that based on the plan that you just laid out, a lot of it depends on whether or not Alex Bars can play tackle. As I said, I'd like to see it. I think he can, but until we see it, I don't know. Jermaine Ifedi is a free agent, so whether they retain him or not, I don't know. Not sure that they would when I look at other, serious considerations that they have. They should not retain him if the plan is for him to play tackle. The reason Seattle let him go is because he failed at tackle. If you're going to keep him, it's because you want him to play guard. So I suspect he will not be a Bear this year. And then you can draft the third or fourth best prospect to play left tackle, but are they any good? So, if you get a really good left tackle in the draft, then I'll say, I'll accept everything else you said, and I'd say, yeah, it's good enough, but it's all about who you get to play that left tackle position.
The Brown season may have ended, but the season of Todd and Dwight has not. He is on the Score.
Hey, guys. End of the year call. Thanks. Sincerely, thanks for putting up with my nonsense. Danny for like 10 years and Layla for a month and Hub 10 years. I mean, I really appreciate it. And I didn't realize my friends were texting me. There was people from the Score. I'm not on social media, but I've kind of become the Scorehead version of St. Jude, the patron saint of lost causes. A lot of people were asking, you know, and kind of rooting. And Layla even replied to a text saying she was thinking of me after they beat the Steelers. So thank you. But anyways, my question, is actually Danny is the, or Dan, I don't know if you like Danny, I apologize. We're Deerfield guys. I knew you back when. But you're very wise in medical stuff, and I love listening to you talk about that, even though you're not a doctor. But Grant Delpit, Hub, and Greedy Williams both had severe injuries. My question is, what have you heard anything? Because that could be like two high-round picks coming back. I'm worried that, you know, when you have nerve stuff with Williams, he may never play again. And, Dan, my question is, we're the same age. A torn Achilles was a career ender, but that was 30 years ago, you know, when we were still trying to play stuff. Do guys come back? I tried to do a little research, but, I mean, is that something like, you know, that is, there's no shot at? And last thing, Hub, I mean, is this something I really felt good at for the first time in a long time? I felt good about Baker, the way he was throwing the ball and his arm strength and decision making. And I actually feel like the needle is seriously pointed up, and it's not just wishful thinking. But again, thanks, guys. I really do appreciate it, and have a great week.
Thanks, Todd. Yeah, as far as the Achilles goes, yeah, you can come back from an Achilles. You may not have your peak explosiveness, but if you're watching Kevin Durant run the floor and shoot a basketball now, the medicine's pretty good on that. The only concern that you have in case, especially as guys get older, is if that means the other Achilles might also be at a risk for being torn, depending on how brittle it is, how much wear and tear it is. But sure, you can come back from that.
Yeah, I mean, as recently as 10, 15 years ago, guys, it was only 50-50 you'd come back from an ACL, and Achilles is the same way. Everybody's coming back now, you know, and whether you get back to 100% or 90 or 95% is the question. But there's got to be something wrong either with the surgery or the rehab for guys not to be able to come back and play. Todd, for whatever it's worth, you're pretty much the first thing I think of whenever I hear Cleveland Browns, period. And that's just from all our time together here at the Score, I guess. So, and you know, listen, they were better than I thought they were. They really were. And I'm curious about Kevin Stefanski now and what's going to happen with this football team. They, if they get healthy, have an excellent offensive line and plays directly into what Stefanski wants to do. But they have a ton of work to do on defense. And you know, Myles Garrett can be a franchise type player. But pretty much everything around him and behind him, to me, feels kind of average to needs to get better. Denzel Ward could be a pretty good cornerback, I think, but they got a lot of work to do on that side of the ball. But they're for real. And what's interesting is I think that the Ravens are kind of stuck in neutral right now, and the Steelers may be going in the wrong direction, and the Browns are going to keep getting better because they got a lot of young kids. So I think you're going to feel better about your football team the next couple of years.
Tim in Hampshire will be our last call to Hub today. He's on the Score. Hey, Tim.
Hey, guys. Outside the obvious deficiencies we have on the offensive side of the ball, what about – it seems like Danny Trevathan, I mean, as much as I have enjoyed him as a Bear, he's sort of at the end of his career, not showing real consistency in my eyes. And is it time to look elsewhere, free agency, or place him through the draft? I just it seems like that's a kind of a weak spot in a traditionally strong point of our team.
Yeah, Tim, I think you probably want to go back and watch some game tape of the second half of the season, because Danny was playing probably as well as he ever has over the last you know, 5, 6, 7, 8 weeks. It took him a while to get back into game shape and playing at game speed. He is 31 years old, you know, and so you got to keep an eye on it. But his contract is structured in a way that there's enough dead cap money on it that you don't save a ton, you know, by moving on. So, no, I don't think that they'll be moving on this year unless I'm reading the cap value of that contract wrong. But he's playing really well. You got to remember he had a season-ending injury, a devastating injury to that elbow, one of the really ugly ones we had seen at the midpoint of the season last year. So it wasn't like a full year of rehab to get back. Then no off-season, no exhibition season. He just was nowhere near game shape or game ready on opening day or early in the season. But once he started logging minutes, second half of the season, I thought he played really well.
Hub, great stuff. Appreciate it as always. You said you weren't going to pick against the Packers. Obviously, the other game gives you a little bit more variance, but let's assume that Patrick Mahomes plays. Who do you like?
Guys, I'm going to pick the Bills. And if Mahomes does play, he's coming off of getting injured last week. Obviously not a full week of preparation. I don't think the Bills are the better team, but I think they've been playing better football for the last 6, 7, 8 weeks. And there's a momentum around that team right now with Bills Mafia and all the crazy stuff. I loved what they did with the charitable donations to Lamar Jackson's. I mean, what a fan base. $75,000. Not like they threw a few hundred bucks at it. It's a great story. And now that doesn't mean they win a football game. But when those kind of things start happening and momentum builds, I just like what's going on with that Buffalo franchise. And I got a feeling they're going to find a way Sunday.
Hub, thank you. Appreciate it.
All right, guys. Take care.
And both of those games, of course, can be heard this Sunday on Sports Radio 670 The Score. Now, you've been bad in our little chat here about what you want to do in the last segment. And I don't know if you're just trolling Jay Zawoski by wanting to do this, but I think we should indulge.
And you know what?
What?
It speaks to everybody who wants us to talk more hockey, talk less hockey.
Yeah, but you put a time limit on it.
I did. We're trolling ourselves. All right, you want me to say what the suggestion is?
Yes.
Or do you want to hold it for the break?
No.
All right, so I said, the Blackhawks finally got a lead yesterday, but they only had it for a minute and 11 seconds. So maybe that's how long we should talk about the game last night.
So
I'm sorry.
It's longer
71 seconds of hockey talk in honor of how long the Blackhawks actually had a lead in a game. Maybe a little more than that if we feel like it. That's coming up next on The Score.
Mackenzie Weegar getting away from Suter. He'll carry it in. Weegar to the late man. Here's a center pass. Open net. What a play to Vetrano. Lankinen got caught at the far post. The Panthers win in overtime.
Yeah, well, they looked a little bit better, I guess. They do this whole giving up five goals thing, which is probably a bad habit to get into. But in honor of them holding a lead for 1 minute and 11 seconds, I'm going to lay out here, and I think you're just going to hear Chelsea Dagger in the background, and we'll conclude with a goal horn. But we do have the host of the Madhouse podcast as our executive producer, Jay Zawoski. So we begin starting now. 71 seconds of hockey talk. Go.
Okay, so hear me out. They played some really good teams. Well, Tampa's really good. Florida, not so good. But they are not getting killed in possession. The power play is actually functional. It's 5 for 12. The problem with the Blackhawks is two things. They don't have anyone that can score that's not named Kane, DeBrincat, or Kubalik, so that's a problem. And their defense is really bad. And their goaltending is really bad. So even when they score and have the puck and actually play like an even game against their opponent, every time they make a mistake, it's in the back of their net. And that's really, really hard to overcome. However, if you want to look at this from the bright side, if you're trying to rebuild, being competitive and losing is the best way and the most satisfying way to get to that number one overall pick. Meanwhile, my biggest concern is the most important prospect on the roster right now, Adam Boqvist, is looking worse and worse every game. And this coach who is supposed to be this great developer of young players is reverse developing him. So that to me is the biggest story to watch throughout the year. Is Adam Boqvist going to continue to suck, or is he going to become the first round pick that everyone tells us he's supposed to be, and he's going to be a top four guy, whatever, because right now it does not look like it. Also,
I thought that was pretty good. You got in some good hockey thoughts there, and that has been 71 seconds of Blackhawks talk in honor of the 71. So this is Layla's idea. I mean, full
credit.
That's
more than I'm used to. I don't know. I couldn't prepare all that stuff.
That's good. Full credit. That is. If you think this is trolling, don't be mad. Be mad at Layla Rahimi, because this was her idea. And it was an awesome
one.
Yes,
it was.
Yeah, that was great. So we need to now keep track of other chunks of time for further installments of limited talk based on how long they hold a lead. Maybe they'll actually, I don't know, win a game at some point. And then, oh my God, what are we going
to
do?
Well, it looked like they were going to be able to beat. Can I keep going? Do I have to stop?
You thought they could beat that team?
Well, Detroit was supposed to be terrible, were last year, historically terrible, and now Detroit's not terrible anymore. So, those are no longer automatic wins. Mm. So it's gonna be a long year. But hey, that's what we're here for, right? You wanna accelerate the rebuild process, get that first overall pick if you can. Owen Power, come on down. It's a great name too. It's a
Owen
Chicago name.
Power.
Owen Power.
That's a great Don Pardo name. Owen Power.
Yes.
That's great. So, all right. Next up, transition with Zach Zaidman. So keep it here on the score.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. T-Mobile.com.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
O'Reilly.